Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we dive into all things Kanye West, President Trump, Elizabeth Warren, student loans, cost of college, and more. These are the questions that you guys sent in at freedom@charliekirk.com. So do it right now. Pull out your phone, freedom@charliekirk.com. Send us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. And before we get any further, help us beat Rachel Maddow in the podcast charts. Right now, Rachel Maddow is beating us. This is unacceptable. So take out your phone, type in Charlie Kirk Show, and press subscribe in your podcast provider, and get your friends to do the same. Type in Charlie Kirk Show, press subscribe, get your friends to do the same. We will surge in the charts if everyone listening to this show right now goes and types in Charlie Kirk Show and press subscribe. Give us those 5-star rating. We got an amazing show for you guys planned. No show quite like it. Exclusive insight. We'll be talking amazing topics. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this Charlie Kirk Show. And if you're not subscribed to the Charlie Kirk Show yet, you go to your phone, type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider app and press subscribe. Go do that right now and leave us a question. So we try to keep some anonymity here, but producer C is what I'll call him. Let's get that first question going.
Hey, Charlie. Isaac from Schaumburg, Illinois wants to know, is there hope for journalism? Do you think journalism can truly become a neutral, objective profession in today's world?
That's a complicated question. Is there hope for journalism? Is no longer journalism. It's now a form of activism. It's now a form of political action where journalism should be about seeking out the truth. So I call this destination journalism that exists today, where they start with what they want the article to say. Like they start with the headline and then they go find the sources that will confirm their headline. So they'll start with like Orange Man bad on the New York Times, and they'll go find a bunch of sources. Yes, I think Trump's horrible. Yes, I think he's horrible. And they'll compile them together. Do I think journalism can truly be neutral, objective profession? I wish. I mean, there's so many good journalists out there that are being suppressed by the activist discipline that journalism has become on the far and radical left. And it's too bad because, you know, the paper of record, the New York Times, they're anything but neutral. They're anything but fair. They're an activist newspaper through and through. Next question.
Charlie, can you explain what the Southern strategy was and why Democrats use it as an example of Republicans being racist? What really happened there?
Yeah, so there's a lot of backstory here and there's a lot of history. Here's the big myth. The big myth is that somehow the party switched, that somehow the Democrats used to be, essentially, what they say is this, is that the Republicans used to be the good guys and the Democrats used to be the bad guys, and they switched. That the Republicans were used to be on the side of freedom and liberty. Now the Democrats are somehow on the side of freedom and liberty. Here's the direct line of continuity. The Republican Party was founded as an anti-slavery party about the liberation of the individual, about empowering individuals. The Democrat Party continued and was always the party of oppression and was the party about keeping people permanently where they were to control those people. So it started on the plantation, and then let's talk about the 1960s. Civil Rights Act, talking about which party was the party that championed the Civil Rights Act, the party that sent the first black individuals to Congress, and the party that gave the women right to vote, the Republican Party, all about the party of the individual freedom. Now let's fast forward to today. Which party is the party that's perfectly fine with keeping the way the things are in the urban cities, that want to keep people down, the party that wants to continue these oppressive big government programs, the Democrat Party, where the Republican Party is the party of school choice, as illustrated as the President of the United States having the forum for the school choice for black kids, which was not covered enough at the White House. This goes to show that the parties never switch. So the left tries to say, oh, well, Charlie, there was a Southern strategy. It goes to show that the left, that Republicans tried to win back the South. And by doing so, they tried to recapture, capture the Southern bad roots. Well, if this was really true, why is it as the South became significantly less racist, it became more Republican? So I'm going to make one more point about this myth of the Southern strategy. But first, what a great week of football this was this last weekend. I'm not going to lie. I had the Ducks of Oregon, of which I'm very, very focused on. My father, my uncle, and my aunt all went to the University of Oregon. Go Ducks. I've been for a very, very long time. Huge Ducks fan. And the Oregon Ducks are the best two-loss team in the country. They should have been in the college football playoff. They shouldn't have lost to Auburn, and they shouldn't have lost to Arizona State. But even with the loss to Arizona State, I created this very convoluted roadmap, and Oregon almost followed it to a T. What needed to happen was the following. Auburn beating Alabama. Check. Oregon blowing out Utah. Check. LSU beating Georgia. Check. Convincingly. Check. Ohio State beating Wisconsin. Check. The only thing that didn't happen is Oklahoma needed to lose to Oklahoma State. Then Oklahoma needed to go back and beat Baylor. That did happen. Check. Oregon would have been in with two losses to the college football playoff because they convincingly beat Utah. They are going to the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl, against Wisconsin, and the Ducks of Oregon will win. Very proud of my Ducks of Oregon that I've been watching my entire life to come back from the 4-8 season 3 seasons ago. Go 500. Go 4 losses last year, 2 losses this year. Very, very big deal. Mario Cristobal, you deserve huge credit. Justin Herbert, Travis Dye, whole team, and they're going to have a great team next year. Congratulations. You got the college football playoff. You got LSU. Producer Connor is a little bit biased in the LSU thing, kind of by obligation. I think LSU is the best team in the country. If Ohio State shows up, they could play well. I love this Ohio State, I'm sorry, the LSU-Oklahoma storyline in the college football playoff because Joe Burrow is a transfer from Ohio State and Jalen Hurts is a transfer from Alabama. And Nick Saban's quite upset because he's not in the college football playoff. So you have two transfer quarterbacks playing against each other in the college football playoff. Jalen Hurts, to the best of my knowledge, will be the first player and, of course, the first quarterback ever in the history of the college football playoff to start for two different teams in the college football playoff. I think that's pretty awesome. Jalen Hurts won the SEC championship for Alabama last year in a return surprise bid. And now he has led another team, Oklahoma, to the college football playoff. I think that's grit. I think that's a pretty cool thing. And so this is all brought to you by our friends at betonline.ag. And don't forget that promo code, podcast1, for your 50% sign-up bonus. Betonline.ag, we love them. And the game of the year, my man, Jimmy Garoppolo. I grew up with him, close family, friends. Rolling Meadows High School, Wheeling High School, total stud, awesome guy. I think the game of the year, 49ers came back. Saints don't know how to tackle except by the face mask at the end of the game. And then Robbie Gould, who should still be a Chicago Bear, kicks the game winner, and the 49ers win to reclaim the top seed to go into the playoffs and eventually the Super Bowl. But we got some big week 14 matchups. By the way, I think we did pretty well in the Sportsnet Challenge this last week. I think my picks held up. I had the 49ers beating the Saints because I pick the 49ers every week because I'm very biased in the direction Jimmy Garoppolo, Chicago boys, stay strong together. We got Houston at Tennessee. Tennessee's got a little bit of a rally going. I used to like Tennessee's coach. Jeff Fisher used to jump out of airplanes. We got Rams at Dallas. I like the Rams. They're getting a little bit of a rally. By the way, the Rams are 8-5 right now. They beat the Seahawks. We called the Rams not having a very good season here in the Charlie Kirk Show. We called it early and often. And remember, this is all brought to you by betonline.ag, promo code podcast1. Buffalo at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's got a quarterback. What do they call him? The Duck? They call him the Duck. It has nothing to do with the Oregon Ducks. They call him the Duck. I like Buffalo, though. Buffalo has Matt Barkley, who is their backup quarterback, who likes my tweets on Twitter. So I like Matt Barkley. And Indy at New Orleans. I like New Orleans. Drew Brees will bounce back from that loss last week. Those are my picks. Anyway, go right now. Go to betonline.ag. Don't forget that promo code podcast1. Go Ducks, everybody. What a great season of college football. And by the way, my school, the school that I have any sort of academic relationship with, Liberty University, who gave me my doctorate, they are in a bowl game. 7-5, everybody. They're playing Georgia Southern and Orlando, Florida. All brought to you by our friends, betonline.ag. Use that promo code podcast1. They do a great job. So the final note I want to talk to you about, the Southern strategy, the big switch, and all this, it goes under the belief that somehow the parties went through this transformational switch. When they talk about this, what they're really saying, in fact, I have a video about this that I want to play. I want to play some sound. I debunked this totally. I debunked it at an event about a year ago, and I thought I did it pretty well. Let's play tape.
Now remember, the Republican Party was founded as the party of freedom and the party of anti-slavery. And if I had to point to one myth, if I could just have a magic wand, to use a term from Barack Obama, a magic wand where I could deprogram one thing that the American youth have been taught that I think is the biggest barrier to entry for the persuasion to get young people Republican, conservative, or independent, or libertarian, whatever you want to call it, it's the idea that somehow the parties switched. I think that is probably one of the most corrosive, misrepresented elements of American history. Would you agree with that, more or less? That it is taught so repeatedly, so incorrectly, and yet so authoritatively to our youth that, well, the Republicans used to be the good guys, and then around the 1960s, they switched seats, and they became the bad guys. And then the Democrats became the saviors. When in reality, The ideological continuity is quite simple. The Democrats have always been about control, whether it be control of the plantations or control over the mind. And Lyndon Baines Johnson realized, who opposed the Civil Rights Act, by the way, he bitterly opposed it and was forced to sign the Civil Rights Act, which was championed by Republicans through Congress, not through Democrats. He realized that Black America needed to still continue to be controlled. And how did he do that, Candace?
He enslaved minds. That's exactly what he did. He enslaved minds.
And you know who else did it pretty well? It's Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh D'Souza is speaking at our upcoming Turning Point USA Student Action Summit, tpusa.com/SAS. Let's play a short clip of Dinesh D'Souza, who wrote a whole book about this. I want to give credit where credit's due. Dinesh D'Souza wrote The Big Lie. He wrote a whole book about this where he said that basically the idea that the party switch are preposterous, that you have to look at the theme and the ethos of each party, and it is ridiculous to think that the parties switch. Play tape of Dinesh D'Souza.
Of all the Dixiecrats, I'm making a list of them now. There are about 200 of them. There are about 30 senators. There's a bunch of congressmen, a bunch of governors, and then a whole bunch of local officials. And you just can say, you know, how many of those... Nixon was supposedly convinced these racist Dixiecrats to become Republicans. But only one did. Strom Thurmond. There's no second example. No one can name a second Dixiecrat who moved to the Republican Party. So what kind of case is this that hinges on one guy? What kind of social movement are you trying to detect that hinges on one fellow? This is madness. And yet, there it is in our history books. It's the conventional wisdom. Everybody knows it to be true. But it's not true.
So I think that answers it pretty thoroughly, that the parties did not switch. Instead, they've stayed disciplined to the founding ethos of liberation versus control, of aspiration versus suppression, and of course, oppression. Next question.
Erica from Iceland wants to know, how can we make sure that science, especially related to climate change, is conducted in a true and honest way and communicated as such? How do we tackle the problem of extremely biased earth scientists?
This is Erica from Reykjavik, because I think that's the only town they have in Iceland. I don't say that it is any offense to an Icelandic person, but they don't have very many towns. Reykjavik. Whenever I think of Reykjavik, I think of two things. I think of President Reagan going and leaving the table of negotiation against the Soviet Union. Everyone thought that was a mistake. And I also think of what? Bobby Fischer, the chess player. You remember he had that chess game in Reykjavik? Anyway, that's what I think of when I think of Iceland and Reykjavik. Okay, here's the question. How can we make sure that science is conducted in a true and honest way? But here's the best way is you have to have peer-reviewed journals, and you have to have scientists that are much more focused on having an open-end scientific conclusion and not trying to actually find something that confirms their own bias. And so when you have people that are funded from a particular source, like government funding, to try to find out some particular end in sight, well, then you're actually not going to be able to answer. You're not going to actually be able to find an honest answer in the capacity you go about doing it. But I always love, you know, when it comes to science in general, the left is totally anti-science because they say, oh, well, 97% of all scientists agree. Well, since when is science a democracy? Like, since when is science an up or down vote? I mean, do we vote on Newton's first law? Do we vote on Newton's second law, that an object in motion object at rest will stay at rest until another object removes it from its position of rest, or an object in motion will stay in motion until it is stopped from motion? I'm paraphrasing the laws, of course, but I'm getting them basically correct. Will those things all of a sudden be now up to an up or down vote? Of course not. You prove it. And until they can actually be proven, until they can be peer-reviewed proven and actually through the actual science of physics or through using mathematics, we should continue to be challenging things. In fact, I want to know the 3% that don't agree with that. I want to see, because are those 3% dummies? Are those 3% not scientists? Because actually, the power of the minority is what drives science. Science is a minority-driven discipline. What do I mean by that? Not minority of skin color, but minority of opinion. In fact, until you have unilateral and total consensus, things actually can't be proven to be true. And they're unclear. And while things are unclear, you should not use them and have total government edict to try to push forth government programs or state force when things have not been made abundantly clear using the very same scientific method. And they always say, oh, we're pro-science. Are you guys pro-science when it comes to the creation of an individual in the womb? And look, we need to encourage contrary voices in science and not squelch them out. Right now, you might get fired if you dare disagree with the far left wing climate change consensus. Next question.
Okay, this is from Mark. Mark says, states representing 196 electoral votes have passed bills dictating that their electoral votes will go to the winner of the national popular vote. If they achieve 270 votes, then the Electoral College is essentially abolished. What are your thoughts on this secretive political move, and how do we confront it?
So this is called the Interstate Compact, and we have a project that we're working on to educate people through our 501c3 at Turning Point USA called Save the States. The Electoral College is an act of brilliance by the Founding Fathers. The left, when they cannot win, they try to change the game. They try to move the goalposts. In fact, we did a podcast on the Electoral College, and if you guys are not yet subscribed to the Charlie Kirk Show, I highly encourage you got to do it right now. Take out your phone, type in Charlie Kirk Show, and press subscribe, because we have a whole, we dive deep into the Electoral College. In fact, let's play some tape from my comments on the Electoral College back in the archives of the Charlie Kirk Show, where, and the pretext of this was that you had a Democrat, Governor Steve Sisolak from Nevada, veto the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact measure, and I went and complimented, I went out of my way to say that two Democrats did something correct when a pro-life Democrat in Louisiana, who got elected, unfortunately, John Bel Edwards, signed a pro-life bill, and Steve Sisolak vetoed the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. So just so you understand how it works before we play the sound here at the Charlie Kirk Show, it essentially, they know that they would not be able to get rid of the Electoral College through Congress. They knew that would not be possible. So instead, they're trying to use the Electoral College against itself. That a state actually can appropriate their electors as they see fit. A state can say, well, we want to choose some of our electors based on congressional district. Which, by the way, was the original intent of the Founding Fathers. They wanted the Electoral College to be around congressional district. So with that being said, the Founding Fathers didn't want mob rule. They wanted decentralized elections. And so did you know that Maine and Nebraska both actually carve out a specific portion of their state based on congressional districts? So, fun fact, Barack Obama in 2008 won one electoral vote in the state of Nebraska. Fun fact, President Trump in 2016 won one electoral vote in Maine. So that's actually an example how states can carve out congressional districts to serve hyper-local representation. So, based on the constitutional interpretation, states can do it as silly as they want. They can say Ohio's electoral votes will go based on whether the Cleveland Indians win the World Series or not. I know that sounds silly, but they can do whatever they want. The Constitution, based on certain litigation, says that to be true. So what they're trying to do through the National Popular Vote and the Interstate Compact, they're basically saying, well, states will then appropriate their electors based on who wins the National Popular Vote, regardless of who actually wins the state. So, for example, some of the states that have passed this are California, Oregon, Illinois, New Jersey, and even Colorado. Now, Colorado is under threat of ballot referendum to try to get it reversed in this upcoming election for the people to actually reverse it. The politicians passed it through the state legislature, and the governor signed it into law. Governor Polis from Colorado, who supposes that it pretends to be a moderate blue dog Democrat, even though he signed it into law with the Democrat legislature, it seems like the people are going to actually try to overturn it. So this is what's happening state by state. It actually won't go into effect until they cumulatively all pass it to get to 270 votes. So it probably won't be into effect in the 2020 election. Let's play tape. Archives, Charlie Kirk Show. Play tape.
Steve Sisolak did something that could only be described as valor and as courage. And really surprising. It threw the entire National Popular Vote organization for a loop because they did not expect this. They said, oh, he's a Democrat. He'll sign it. Oh, you know, he'll sacrifice Nevada's sovereignty. He'll sacrifice Nevada's 6 votes. And out of nowhere, he vetoed it. This hero vetoed it. And this is not a Republican or Democrat issue. In fact, he put forth this beautiful statement. So I'm going to read, quote, verbatim, Governor Steve Sisolak on Twitter, May 30th. My statement on the recent bill, quote, over the past several weeks, my office has heard from thousands of Nevadans. Isn't that great? Isn't this what our government should be all about? Grassroots accountability? I continue. Across the state, urging me to weigh the state's role in our national elections. After a thoughtful deliberation, isn't that amazing? I just want to stop. Isn't it great to have a politician do thoughtful deliberation? Boy, I wish we had that more often. Let me resume. After thoughtful deliberation, I have decided to veto, hero, Assembly Bill 186. It's just so rare. I'm sorry, I have to stop myself. It's just so rare to find a Democrat do something heroic. It's actually so rare to find a politician do something heroic that doesn't go along with the national narrative and doesn't go along with what the far left wants. Let me resume. Once effective, the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact could diminish the role of smaller states like Nevada in national electoral contests and force Nevada's electors to side with whoever wins the national popular vote rather than the candidate Nevadans choose.
The Electoral College is a firewall against tyranny. There is a fundamental difference between democracy and a constitutional republic. In fact, we have a presidential republic. We went into this in one of the previous episodes of our show last week, 3 or 4 episodes ago, where we dove really far into what it actually meant to be a constitutional republic. So the left always says, well, we're a democracy. No, we're not. At the worst times in American history, we used the auspices and the fake illusion of democracy to put forth oppressive rules and laws because certain individuals wanted to go against a minority. For example, Jim Crow laws. So just because a majority of people believe something does not mean it's a good idea. A majority of people believed in Jim Crow. A majority of people believed in segregation. That didn't make it a good idea. The majority, in fact, can be wrong. It's that you need guiding principles enumerated in the Constitution to protect individual liberty and protect individual rights, even when you might disagree with those rights, even when that makes you uncomfortable. So, for example, I will to my death defend a socialist's right to be wrong. I will defend to my death a socialist's right to free speech and an atheist's right to free speech. And you can and should respect the Judeo-Christian fabric and nature of our founding and the ideas in our Constitution. Just to understand, in the Constitution, this could be a whole other podcast, separation of church and state is nowhere in the Constitution, just so we understand. That was a singular letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote to the Danbury Baptist Convention. I think that's what, Danbury? I always get that. It was in Connecticut. Thomas Jefferson and many other presidents had churches perform musical ceremonies in the Supreme Court building. There was a reason why we opened with prayer in the United States Congress. You are allowed the freedom to practice any religion that you want, but never before was there the freedom from religion. There's the freedom of religion. Huge difference. We'll do no other podcast. In fact, we're going to interview my very good friend Rob McCoy at the Student Action Summit if we have time. If not, we'll do it at a later date, who is a pastor in Thousand Oaks, California, and also was former mayor of Thousand Oaks. Amazing guy who understands these issues so unbelievably well. Dear Christian, awesome conservative. He really dives into these things really in a really super way. And so the Electoral College is a firewall against tyranny. The founding fathers did not want mob rule. They want a representative constitutional republic, and it does exactly that. And it is a threat to our republic if the left continues to try to go after the Electoral College. Next question.
Charlie, Joshua wants to know, who do you feel best represents what direction the Democratic Party should be taking?
So I want to just clarify what I said earlier and be hyper-specific. Thomas Jefferson's letter was the letter to Danbury Baptist Association, just so we're perfectly clear. I always kind of get the wording of that a little bit mixed up, so just so we're clear. Who do I think in the Democrat Party best represents the direction they should be going? I want the return of Blue Dog Democrats. I really do. I mean, I want the return of John Delaney's. I want a return of people that admit America's the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world, that respect constitutional liberties like Alan Dershowitz. I want the non-negotiable Democrats. What do I mean by that? I want Democrats that believe in non-negotiables. For example, that life is non-negotiable, that borders are non-negotiable, that we will not send our servicemen and women into reckless war any longer, that the size and scope of government is non-negotiable. But what is negotiable? Okay, what's negotiable is how much social welfare should we actually be doing? You know, that to me is a fine conversation to have. And by the way, that used to be the conversation we had. There were non-negotiable Democrats. Did you know that? JFK versus Nixon. If you guys listen to the JFK-Nixon debates in the 1960s, they were agreeing way more than they were disagreeing. Now you have people so fundamentally far apart. You have the Marxists against the freedom fighters. That's basically the way, that's basically the 2020 election. You got Marxists and Stalinists against the freedom fighters. You got the Castro sympathizers against freedom fighters. In the 1960 election, JFK versus Nixon, very clearly you had Nixon saying, well, I hate communism. And JFK saying, well, I hate communism too. Well, I like free enterprise. Well, I hate free enterprise too. That was a Democrat party after JFK gets sworn in who says, not ask what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Essentially, what can you do to step up? Don't ask what we can give you. What can you do as an individual? JFK praised tax cuts at the Manhattan Economic Club. JFK talked about the power of free enterprise. This was a Democrat. This is what a lot of people still think the Democrat Party stands for. But Donald Trump has broken this mental hypnosis Democrats have put forward. And guess what? I'm glad that now the Republican Party is the party. And I always like, I look at this as the Democrat Party is now the party of expensive wine drinkers. And the Republican Party is now the party of beer drinkers. The Republican Party is the party now of people that shower before work and after work. And that's a good thing. The party of people that work with their hands. The party of people that have dignity in their work. That don't have hedge funds and yachts and want to make China more rich. You combine all these things together. You can perfectly see that the Democrat Party have left their roots and cast them aside completely and totally. The Democrat roots used to be, I love America. I love the Constitution. I want what's best for my country. And I'm going to do whatever it takes to serve the nation state. I just think government should play a little bit bigger role in doing so. And now what's really got muddled, and I blame Republicans and conservatives for this. Conservatives should have been against the Iraq War. Conservatives should have been against trillion-dollar deficits. Conservatives should have been against Medicare Part D. Conservatives should have been against No Child Left Behind. Conservatives should have been against all these big government programs. When you're not for them, you muddy the water so much and allow radicalization to happen on the left. Allow the Democrats to own the big government programs. Allow the Democrats to own, we can run government better. Instead, it was weak and moderate Republicans for years that allowed the Democrats to get away with this. We betrayed our principles for 30 years. We went into countries and invaded them that we should not have gone into. We borrowed money we did not have. We have a $22 trillion debt. When I first started Turning Point USA, tpusa.com, big conference coming up, Student Action Summit, tpusa.com/SAS. When I first started Turning Point USA, do you know what the national debt was? $11 trillion. It's doubled over the course of my activism at Turning Point USA, doubled. And the fact that we don't talk about the deficit anymore in the conservative circles is horrible. And the president, by the way, is not the one to blame. He's submitted budgets that will balance. He has fought for balanced budgets time and time again, yet it's Congress and both parties that refuse to balance our budgets. One of the biggest threats to our freedom and liberty, one of the biggest threats to the future of our country are rising debts and deficits. In fact, I see it right now. Producer C over here saying, Charlie, play the clip. All right, I'll play the clip. But before I play the clip, getting your master's degree can open up a whole new world of opportunities. Better jobs, more advancement. A master's degree can help you be a whole new you. And now's the best time to make it happen with help from Ashford University. It's convenient and flexible. Ashford University's online master's degree program allow you to learn at your own pace. You can study wherever you're most comfortable learning. What are some things that get in the way of higher education, and how do you think online courses will remedy those issues? One course at a time. At Ashland University, 6-week-long courses allow you to take one course at a time. Being enrolled in one class at Ashford means that you are considered a full-time student. Easy enrollment. The GRE, GMAT, and other standardized test scores are not required for enrolling at Ashford. Accreditation. Ashford University is fully accredited with WASC, Senior College and University Commission. New opportunities are right around the corner. Now is the time to start earning your master's degree. Enroll now by going to ashford.edu/Kirk. That's ashford.edu/Kirk to start your master's degree today. ashford.edu/Kirk. I was talking about the debt and deficit going all the way back into 2012. Let's play tape one of my first ever Fox News interviews on Neil Cavuto. Play tape.
And now 18-year-old Charlie Kirk is saying enough is enough. Enough with a national debt zooming in on $16 trillion and expecting his generation to pick up the tab. So Charlie is sounding the alarm, and he's letting young voters know through these memes, as they're known. He's posting them on things like Facebook and Twitter, how bad this is getting and the bill politicians in Washington are sending. Now, Charlie, you're calling this generational theft, but the rap against the young is that, well, they're not like you, so they're not up on this kind of stuff. What's more, they don't care about this kind of stuff. Is it an uphill battle for you?
Well, absolutely. I mean, our public school education system and everybody around us is trying to make it seem like this debt is not a big problem. The Obama administration says, well, it wasn't really their fault. And we're not trying to point fingers. We're just trying to address the problem. And a lot of our generation, we're trying to wake them up through Facebook and Twitter. And we're having a lot of success through social media.
So I've been on this shtick for some time, and it's been Democrats and Republicans together that have sold out our country for their convenience, cocktail parties, Ivy League enrollment, that have sold out our country so they can get invited to the right cocktail parties, admitted to the correct country clubs, and their kids can keep on going to the Ivy League schools. It's sick and it's wrong. We need to balance our budget. And President Trump is fighting in every direction. Imagine being President Trump. They're spying on you. The deep state is leaking on you. They're writing articles and books by anonymous trying to go against you. And what do you have to worry about? All these things in front of you, and the swamp wants deficits. Remember this. The swamp and the deep state want deficits. Why? Well, the swamp does not actually want American exceptionalism. The more that we borrow, the more that we actually give to China, the more that we allow them to buy our securities and buy our bonds, you know what happens? That's our sovereignty decreasing. Our $22 trillion debt is one of the greatest threats to American liberty and freedom. And every conservative listening to this podcast better wake up and understand that we got to start talking about the deficit again, because our country will crumble if we don't. Next question.
Nadine from Suffolk wants to know, what was it like meeting Kanye West in person?
Well, I love Kanye. I've had a lot of fun with him, and you know, the great Candace Owens, former communications director, Turning Point USA, and now chairwoman of Blexit, who does a great job. Blexit.com, Black Exit from the Democrat Party. Everyone should check it out. She does a really nice job, and she'll be speaking at our Turning Point USA Student Action Summit next week. She was the reason I got to meet Kanye. I found him to be very authentic and always fun, And it's been really, really promising to see his transformation. I'm a proud Christian, and we have a podcast coming up where I talk about my Christian faith. Jesus Christ is the Savior of the world. He is the Son of God. He's also God in three parts. I will explain the gospel in four words, three words, two words, one word, and then I will tell you a little bit more about why I believe what I believe. The gospel in four words is Jesus took my place. Gospel in three words is Him for me. Gospel in two words is substitutionary atonement. And one word is grace. That is the gospel in four words. Every other religion across the world is about how you get closer to God. Christianity is about how God got closer to us. Every other religion in the world is what can I do to build myself up to try to get closer to God, better deeds, better gifts, and all this. In the doctrine and the theology that I follow, it's not about that. Instead, it's about surrendering yourself to someone who sacrificed himself for us. It's an amazing belief system to have. It will change your life, and it will give you liberation and liberty that nothing else possibly could. And there will actually be a renewal of your mind and a renewal of your spirit, as it talks about all throughout the New Testament. We have four documented cases, actually five, if you actually think about the early parts of Acts, of Jesus Christ walking the earth. Even from a secular point of view, the Bible is the most amazing book ever to exist in the history of the world. Its existence, 5,000 years of history, 35 authors, 66 books. If you're Catholic, it's more than that. I joke around with Michael Knowles about it. You guys can check out that episode in the archives of The Charlie Kirk Show. Michael Knowles and I disagree, but it's an amazing thing. Jesus Christ is the Savior of the world, and I'm so glad that Kanye West has brought him into his life. And if you guys have not made that commitment yet to have Jesus Christ your personal Savior, do that right now. Go find a Bible, and you just say a very simple prayer, and if you mean it, you'll get entrance into heaven. It's not if you say it, you get into heaven. If you mean it, you get into heaven. If you actually surrender your life to Jesus Christ, and you basically say, Jesus, I am nothing without you. You were sent by God as a vessel to save our sins. You led a perfect life. You died for those sins. I want to follow you, and I surrender myself to you. Please save me, and you are my personal Savior. If you say those basic words or some semblance of it, and you really mean it, you will be given entrance into heaven, and you will be given the greatest fulfillment that you could possibly imagine. And with it comes joy that cannot be put into words, and I think that's a good message to share this holiday season. So God bless Kanye, and thank you for what you've done for the kingdom and for everything else. Next question.
Okay, this is Jordan from Boston. Charlie, Senator Warren has proposed a forgiveness of federal loans for graduates earning under $100,000 per year, with phased out forgiveness for those earning between $100,000 and $250,000 per year. She has also proposed 100% free higher education. What competing college debt solution would you suggest to the president? Is this a playing field that conservatives will automatically lose because progressives are just trying to give away more free stuff?
So before I answer that question, everyone send in your questions to freedom@charliekirk.com. Senator Warren has proposed the forgiveness of federal loans for graduates earning under $100,000 per year with phased-out forgiveness. All right, let's just stop here, okay? No more student loan forgiveness. I believe in no forgiveness. Done. Game over. Why? I don't want to get into competition of giving out free stuff with the left. You're entitled to nothing. What about the kids that went to two-year technical schools? What about the kids that went to the military? What about kids that didn't go to college? What about the firefighters? What about the police officers? So let me get this straight. You went and borrowed $145,000 to go study about how much you should hate America from University of California, Berkeley, or Stanford, or Harvard, or Yale, while someone who didn't get into those schools, and maybe you got in the right way, or maybe you didn't get in the right way, because there's been lots of questions around how kids are actually getting to schools lately, and you take out this big debt burden, and now you've been taught that Marxism is wonderful, there is no God, America's horrible, no borders, and there's unlimited genders, you're totally miserable, and you're making a macchiato for me. I don't even order a macchiato at Starbucks, and you got all this unbelievable debt, and now I'm supposed to forgive you? No, no, no. Meanwhile, the kid who didn't get in, who's maybe a plumber, electrician, who's working with his hands, HVAC, policeman, firefighter, medical professional, whatever it might be, he now has to work harder so he could pay more in taxes to go bail out the Ivy League person who's been taught to hate America. I don't think so. That's not how this works. Take some personal responsibility for your life. And I'm telling you, the people that worked hard, I don't believe in raising taxes and penalizing them because they made good choices to get scholarships, defraying college, taking gap years. There's a huge population out there of people that we can't forget. The people that didn't go to four-year college and made rational financial consumer decisions. People say, well, Charlie, what about a better payment plan for them? Okay, fine. You want to talk about refinancing it? Fine. Here's what I'll meet you halfway, okay? You should be allowed to declare bankruptcy with student loans. That's it. I think it's nonsense you can't declare bankruptcy. There is already refinancing companies. You guys see those ridiculous ads for you can refinance your student loans? There's plenty of opportunities for you to do so, okay? But the bottom line is this, is that college has become ridiculously more expensive over the last 10 or 20 years, and is worth less than ever before. It's not worthless, even though some could make the argument that it is. Here's how it all ties together. We have a generation of kids that are being pushed to go to college or study things that don't matter while they don't have money to go find jobs that don't exist. So money they don't have, study things that don't matter to find jobs that don't exist. Bad equation. Kids, when I ask kids, hey, why are you going to college? They look at me funny. We should ask our high school seniors, hey, why are you going to college, not where are you going to college? I did not go to four-year college. I encourage everyone listening to this podcast right now, take a gap year. In fact, I have some very extended commentary on a future episode of The Charlie Kirk Show, so make sure you guys are subscribed. Type in Charlie Kirk Show, press subscribe, give us a five-star rating. But I'll tell you right now, these colleges don't care about you. If you're listening to this right now, maybe you're just walking through campus and you're hustling to final, they don't care about you. Your class sizes are increasing. Your teachers are selling a textbook back to you when there's no improvements and no changes whatsoever to you while you're borrowing money for it, while they're earning ridiculous salaries. Look up Senator Elizabeth Warren, producer C. Look up her salary. It's like $400,000 or something a year from Harvard so she could teach kids to hate America. So kids are going into debt so they can learn to hate our country. That's basically what's happening. So they go find jobs that have no relevancy at all to their job degree or major. You know what the national graduation rate is? The national graduation rate is 59%. That means 41% of kids that enter college will not graduate. Only 59%. College is a broken cartel. It is a cartel that no one has challenged. It is a cartel that no one has gone up against except President Trump. And so I'm going to read for you guys off of one of my tweets. It says this. Elizabeth Warren says it's obscene to profit off students is what she says. It's obscene to profit off students, even though the for-profit schools are the ones that have lower tuition and are able to deliver actual degrees that students can do something. Computer engineering, IT services, whatever it is. She said it's obscene to profit off students. Oh, really? Cost of one Warren-authored textbook, $258. Cost of one Warren co-authored textbook, $126. Cost of one Warren-authored supplemental chapter, $60. Cost of Elizabeth Warren one-year salary, $430,000. Good poll, production team, on that. She's the one saying that it's too much. Oh, we can't exploit our students, even though she's the one exploiting them and they're getting into debt. College is a cartel. They don't care about the students passing through them, and they're sitting on massive and massive endowments. And on a future episode of The Charlie Kirk Show, I'm going to sit down with Will Chamberlain, who owns Human Events. His whole thing is about seizing the endowments. I'm going to challenge him a little bit on it because I don't know if it's really something that conservatives should be embracing, which is the seizing of private assets, but I'm open to it because it's a cartel. And they've been screwing and exploiting our students for so too long. So stay tuned for a future episode of The Charlie Kirk Show where I sit down with the great Will Chamberlain. I look forward to discussing it, maybe disagreeing a little bit with that. Next question.
Charlie, I watch what happens to those students on college campuses that verbally assault and ruin and destroy the private property of members of Turning Point chapters. Whatever happens to those people?
Well, look, it's a great question, and it happens far too often. And so, look, on these campuses, we're fighting every single day at Turning Point USA to start more chapters. And everyone not yet involved at Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. We'd love to get you involved. And the answer is not often enough. We have this highlight reel. We just play this video, this lunatic from Sacramento State. I mean, this guy is unhinged, screaming and punching people in the face. We had Hayden Williams get punched in the face at University of California, Berkeley. We had our students firebombed at Tulane University. We had our students in Deer Park, Park City, Utah. Right near Deer Valley, not Deer Park, Deer Valley. Bear sprayed, 16 kids bear sprayed. That has not happened because we have a two-tier justice system in this country. There's one set of rules for conservatives. Now, if you're a conservative, they'll do the Soviet thing. Show me the man, I'll show you the crime. That's how it works if you're a conservative. I don't like this person, I'll go find a crime. Well, guess what? Read the book, Three Felonies a Day. Everyone listening to this podcast has committed a felony. Every single person. The reason, and Alan Dershowitz is so good on this, he said, I will always err on the side of freedom and individual choice. Because if we create a police state where we go find what someone has done wrong just because you don't like them, the extrapolation of that and the consequences of that is so scary and so dangerous. But the other side of it, which is the liberals, which is show me the crime, I'll show you someone who's innocent. Like, wait, what? You people getting punched in the face? Andy Ngo's great. He's going to be at our Student Action Summit, Turning Point USA Student Action Summit in Palm Beach. He's a terrific guy. He's a gay Asian journalist. He was beaten in the streets brutally by Antifa, and zero people have been arrested. So to answer that question, not enough people have been arrested. And the left, they are so indecent. In fact, let's play a clip of where I talked about this at one of our recent events. And it was on our Instagram. We're also going to play it right here. Why do people running for the Democrat nomination not to denounce Antifa?
Oh, yeah, bro. Bernie Sanders is
pro-Antifa.
A
paramilitary organization that goes around and pounds people on the head if they dare disagree with them. Could you imagine for a second if people were wearing MAGA hats and going and beating journalists in the streets?
I can, because they did it at Israelis.
They would be rightfully arrested.
Yeah, right?
So we want to talk about culture. Show me where conservative Antifa is. Show me a well-funded, well-organized an organization that was not denounced by the president or people like it that go after political opponents. You can't find it. And there's a reason why the Democrats will not denounce Antifa. It's because if you want to see the face of the Democrat Party, I'll show it to you. They're wearing a mask. Okay.
So if you guys want to get involved with Turning Point USA and the work we're doing, takes firm footing, and unfortunately, people are not held accountable enough.
Charlie, Rachel wants to know if you can recommend the best books to understand the history of the United States, the political parties in the United States, and overall, what books do you read to better understand America and where we are today? Thanks.
So before I answer that question, let me tell you about this great app called Fanium. I've been made aware of this. With Fanium, you could play against your friends and win real prizes by predicting what will happen in your favorite shows. It's all free. So if you guys watched Bachelor, Desperate Housewives, Survivor, my team has had to tell me about these shows. I guess people like them. Some of your favorite former contestants write the questions and play along with you on the Fanium app. So you check in on with our leaderboard to compare scores with your friends and see if your name is at the top so you can win real prizes. They're up to $500 in prizes a day. It's actually a really brilliant idea what they're doing here. All of your favorite shows are on Fanium. Play today and give your TV watching experience some more excitement. There's no other reality show prediction game like Fanium on the planet. So start playing Fanium right now and bring some extra excitement in your television watching experience. Download Fanium in the Apple or Android App Store and use that promo code Charlie to get into exclusive games that give you a better chance of winning. All right, so people ask me all the time, Charlie, what books do you read? You know, what books do you recommend? I break into a couple categories. Depends how serious you want to get. If you guys really want to get deep and you guys really want to spend the time, you guys got to read Socrates, Plato, Aristotle. You have to read Descartes, Machiavelli, Aquinas, Augustine, Bacon, Hume, Burke, Mill, Locke, Rousseau, Marx, and that's about it. So that's about a year worth of reading if you do nothing but read for about a year. So, but if you guys are looking for actual specific books, short pieces of literature that have changed the course of history, read Cicero's writings, read Marcus Aurelius's writings, read The Prince by Machiavelli, which will explain the American left very well to you, read The Communist Manifesto, read John Locke and all of his writings, read Common Sense by Thomas Paine, read Edmund Burke, and then more modern stuff, read Road to Serfdom, by F.A. Hayek. Read Free to Choose by Milton Friedman. These things are timeless. And of course, if you guys want to get an understanding of where our morality comes from, read the Bible and read the lessons. So here's what you do. Here's the way you should read the Bible. Read Matthew 5, which is the Sermon on the Mount, and then read each one of the parables that Jesus talks afterwards and ask, how can that relate to my personal life? That's the way you read the Bible, okay? And there's other ways, other ways to read it. But if you're totally new to Christianity and you're totally new to your walk with faith, read. When Jesus talks about the good shepherd, he talks about the door, he talks about the sower who's sowing his seeds, and compare yourself to that metaphor. Now, why did Jesus Christ talk in metaphors? Because it's timeless. That's what's so amazing about it. It works at no matter, it works in 1400, it works in year 2000, it works in 1960. It's totally timeless. Because metaphors can stand the test of time. It's so brilliant of what he talked about. He knew they got people's attention and that they had deep memory and that people would actually be able to relate to them. And so, look, people ask me about books all the time. People say, Charlie, what books should I read? Here's the biggest bottom line. Read. I'm reading news all day, every day. I read probably an hour to 2 hours a day. I try to read my Bible every single day, but I'm just vociferously reading, you know, Breitbart, Politico, Drudge, the Bongino Report, all sorts of different stuff I'm reading. And that's the new thing out there, Bongino Report. Dan's a close friend and he does really good in the podcast space too. But I'm always trying to consume information, even from the left. You guys are serious about getting into this. You guys should be reading all the time and reading the great thinkers. Last question.
Jaden from Detroit wants to know, if you could provide a play-by-play into the tactics that President Trump uses, like his brashness, his humor, his disarming honesty, to turn the country around despite overwhelming opposition he faces? And why is President Trump so effective?
President Donald Trump is one of the most effective presidents in American history. And his tactics are so effective. He's able to disarm the media. He's able to get the left to oppose things they used to support. It's absolutely incredible. But first, Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all for free. No credit card needed, no sign up. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all of your devices today. And so look, the president, his greatest attributes are his relentlessness, his honesty, his love for our country, And the time I've spent around with him, he is so focused on helping our country. He always asks me, how can I help you? How are things going? He's asking more questions. And it's so opposite than the caricature the media tries to paint for him and of him. They try to say, oh, he only cares about himself. Well, that's just not true. Those are people that have never spent any time with him. Those are people that know nothing about him. And those are people that, quite honestly, want him to fail. The President of the United States has been able to use Twitter to go around the mainstream media as an unbelievably effective tool. What I love most about the Twitter, and I have an upcoming book, MAGA Doctrine, that you guys can all pre-order on charliekirk.com if you guys are interested in doing so, and we'd love to support MAGA Doctrine. I talk about how the Twitter feed sets the tone for the entire administrative state. It's very clear what he believes. There's no confusion, and he's able to basically say, here's my stance. Someone can't misinterpret it, and if you guys don't fulfill what I say or what I'm doing, you guys are directly undercutting me. I think it's absolutely brilliant. I think his use of it has been cutting edge and is something that other presidents should try to replicate. I love a president that is very honest about the media. I like a president who is more, honestly, more frustrated with the process and more frustrated with the disingenuousness of the left than someone who's just trying to be politically correct, trying to manage the decline of America, like President Barack Obama. President Obama said all the right things. President Obama went to all the right parties. President Obama attended the right universities. I like President Trump, who was able to use some humor, who was able to reach out to other communities, and who was able to be as effective. At the lowest ever black unemployment, lowest ever Latino unemployment, lowest ever black poverty rate, unbelievable GDP numbers. We have more job openings than we're able to fill them. It's the greatest economy in American history. ISIS is completely destroyed. Al-Baghdadi is dead. U.S. Steel is alive. We have trade deals being renegotiated. China's finally being put on the ropes. We got Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, 150 circuit court judges. You declared a national emergency for illegal immigration. Immigration might be the most important, biggest issue happening in America. And all that's just in 3 years. Imagine what he can do with 8. Well, this has been so fun, everybody. Please subscribe to The Charlie Kirk Show if you guys haven't already. Type in Charlie Kirk Show, press subscribe, leave that 5-star rating, and leave us a review. Thank you guys so much for your loyalty to our show. We are surging in the charts. If you guys want to help us beat Rachel Maddow, type in Charlie Kirk Show, press subscribe. And if you guys want to get involved with Turning Point USA, it's tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. Thanks so much, guys. Till next time, Charlie Kirk, host of The Charlie Kirk Show. See you soon.
During the season of giving, we'd like to offer you a little something special, and all we're asking in return is a few moments of your time. We need you to complete a short survey because your opinion matters to us and helps support the show. It'll only take a couple of minutes, and if you're one of the first people to do it, we'll give you a reward in return. Just go to podcastone.study and everything will be right there for you. That's podcastone.study. The first 150 people to complete the survey will get a $10 gift card to amazon.com. All of our shows are supported by advertisers, so filling this out will really help us. So please go to podcastone.study, and as always, thank you for supporting the show. And happy holidays from all of us at Podcast One.